Dr. Shabir, we're continuing our series, or beginning it actually, with prophets in the Bible and the Quran, and our first prophet is Prophet Adam. So
that's
tell
right.
me, what are the mm-hmm. what are the similarities in the story of the Bible and the Quran, in the story of Adam in the Bible and the Quran?
There are many similarities. On one occasion, I actually, in a church, in a gathering mostly comprised of Christians, I was asked to speak, and I began by reading from the Quran the story of Adam. And some Christian ladies came to me later on and said, you know, when you began reading, we thought you were reading from our Bible, and because the stories are so similar. So similarities. God created Adam and his spouse and placed them in a garden. And they committed a sin, and God drove them out of the garden. They became the progenitors of a large human population. So today, we look back to their story for a lesson on how to deal with temptation and how to govern our lives in a way that is pleasing to God, so that we go to the ultimate garden, the Garden of Paradise.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are the basic outlines that are similar. What are the major differences that you find?
So, there are some differences, and these will maybe become evident if we just describe the stories one after another. So, let me start with the biblical story then. The Bible begins with the book of Genesis, and in Genesis chapter 1, the creation is described, starting with the heavens and the earth, and then eventually we get to the sixth day of creation. Adam is then created. And then Genesis chapter 2, well, Adam and his spouse, it says that God created man in his own image, created man male and female. And then Genesis chapter 2 gives us more details about this, telling us that God created the man, and the man was not happy. And God created many different animals and so on, bringing them to the man. But he would not be happy with any of these until God put him to sleep and then took out one of his ribs and made his spouse from the rib.
I think it's called help partner.
The help is, right? Partner, yes. And she comes to be called Eve because she's the living, Eve, which means something like the living one, because she gives life to, or she becomes the mother of all those who are alive. The narrative continues into Genesis chapter 3, where God tells them to eat from every tree except from this one tree. And in the Bible, it is mentioned as the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But Satan, well, actually, at this stage, he's not called Satan. He's called the serpent. The serpent is the most clever of all of the animals. So he comes forward to Eve and says, well, did God really say you're not supposed to eat from this tree? And he gets her to eat from the tree. She eats from it and finds that it's good. And then she offers it to her husband, and he also ate. Later on, God came walking in the garden in the cool of the day and called out to them. In the meantime, Adam was hiding behind a tree because being ashamed of what he had done. God called out to him and asked him, did you eat from that tree which I forbade you from eating from? And when he admitted to this, he actually put the blame on his wife. He said, the woman you gave here to be with me, she gave me the fruit and mm-hmm. caused me to eat it. So God put a curse on the woman so that she would forever bear children with pain, and yet her desire will be for her husband, and put a curse on the man that you will have to gather your food from amidst thorns and thistles, and you will have to sweat for your living. So the story was left there, and the rest of the Old Testament hardly refers back to this story, as if, you know, this was the problem with our first parents. The New Testament picks it up and makes this a cornerstone of theology. Paul, in his letters, especially the letter to the Galatians, points out that through one man, sin came into the world, and the antidote for that is that Jesus comes in, another man, bearing the sins, and therefore reversing the whole scenario so that grace now comes into the world. So that was the first Adam, and Jesus becomes now the second Adam.
Mm-hmm. So the story of original sin comes out then.
Yes. So especially in Pauline theology, the story of original sin is very prominent, and justification by the redemptive act of Jesus, especially of him dying on the cross on behalf of humankind.
Mm-hmm. So tell me how the Islamic, the Quranic narrative changes.
The Quranic narrative picks up all of, many of these basic themes, but has its own particular slant on things. This is told in many passages of the Quran. Now, in the 20th chapter of the Quran, we find it mentioned that, especially in the 119th verse, that Adam disobeyed his creator, but God forgave him and chose him and guided him. And so this is how Muslims think of Adam as being a prophet, because he receives guidance from God. And obviously that guidance will have to be passed on to his progeny. So from the Quranic perspective, there's no such thing as an original sin. Everyone is responsible for his or her own deeds. And of course, God is ever willing to forgive us. So we don't need somebody else to pay a penalty on our behalf. But we reach out to God asking him for forgiveness. I should add a side note here that the asking God for forgiveness is not unique to Islam. This is common in Judaism and Christianity as well. But in the Quranic narrative, it all fits together in this way, that there is no mention of any original sin, and it would be contrary to the Islamic theology to have such a concept as original sin. It doesn't fit within the Quranic story at all.
I guess in the Quranic story, Adam asked for forgiveness, right? He and his wife immediately recognized that, okay, they've done something wrong, and then I think God shows them the way to seek forgiveness.
Yes, in the Quran, this is mentioned in the 7th chapter, in the 23rd verse, for example. A dua or prayer, a supplication is mentioned there that they prayed when they said, "Zalamna anfusana wa illam taghfir lana wa tarhamna lanakunanna min al-khasirin." We have wronged our souls, and if you do not forgive us and have mercy on us, then we will be among the losers. Muslims recite that prayer to this day. So it follows from that original story. An interesting point in the Quran is that the part about Eve being the first one tempted and then tempting her husband is absent from the Quran altogether. And the Quran presents it as Satan tempting the two of them. The serpent isn't mentioned. Satan is mentioned. So Satan whispered to the two of them, فَوَسْوَسَ لَهُمَا الشَّيْطَانِ. Satan whispered to the two of them, فَأَزَلَّهُمَا الشَّيْطَانُ عَنْهَا. So Satan caused the two of them to slip from the state that they were in, and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's the two of them together. The only time one is singled out is Adam, and he's singled out for blame in the 20th chapter that I mentioned previously, where it says, فَعَصَى آدَمُ رَبَّهُ. Adam disobeyed his Lord. Mm-hmm. But it is never mentioned about Eve alone that she specifically disobeyed her Lord. Mm-hmm. And it may be that the Quran intends here to reverse the age-old demeaning of women, because that story was actually used to put women in their place, to say, well, you are the daughters of Eve. And unfortunately, even we hear Muslim scholars referring to women in this demeaning manner. Sometimes it is used, I mean, the title itself, Daughter of Eve, could be a noble title, but it could also be used in a demeaning way. Mm-hmm. Some hadiths may also pick up upon the biblical story and continue the narrative that the woman is shaped from a rib, and you know, that's essentially crooked. Mm-hmm. So we should be careful as Muslims to know the stories to begin with, and not mix up the stories, but should bring together with the Quran those aspects that are known from previous revelations that are compatible with the Quran itself. And certainly it's not compatible with the Quran to present women in a demeaning manner.
Mm-hmm. What sort of punishment did Adam and Eve bear after committing this sin?
In the Quran, it is said that God forgave them and guided them, taught them how to pray. It does not seem from the Quran itself that there is a punishment that is prolonged. Now, among Muslim scholars, there are two views about the original garden in which Adam and Eve were placed. Some think that they were in a heavenly abode and then they were brought down to earth. So on that view, one would see this as some sort of punishment, that they're being forgiven, but at the same time, there's some consequence mm-hmm. of their sin. But some other Muslim scholars follow from the biblical narrative that the creation was actually here on earth, because the some hadiths even say that various soils were gathered together to put Adam together. But without those details, without necessarily agreeing to those details, we can see that there are scholars who rely on such details to formulate a general theory that Adam was actually placed in a garden here on earth. Because garden by itself, Jannah in Arabic, could mean the final heavenly abode that we want to go to eventually, but it could mean just simply any garden. Any garden could be the Jannah or the garden. So that's one view. Now, I prefer this view because it, one, it gels with the biblical narrative, so we don't need to introduce more arguments than necessary between Muslims and others. Second, it gels with a scientific narrative. So here, too, we don't want Muslims to be arguing with scientists beyond necessity. If there's something that is clear in the scriptures and scientists say something different, well, then now we have a challenge to interpret the Quran in the light of science, or science in the light of the Quran. But we do not need to multiply the differences.
What sort of lessons do you think we are intended to learn from the biblical narrative and the Quranic narrative about this, you know, the story of the tree and them approaching the tree and committing sin?
From the biblical narrative, there is one puzzling aspect where the tree is described as the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And one may wonder about that, like what's wrong with eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Interestingly, the Quran does not mention the tree in this manner. It just says this tree without specifying what tree it is. From the Quranic narrative, the lesson that is often brought home in Muslim sermons is that Muslims need to be aware that Satan will continue to whisper to us to get us to deviate from the path of God. And when we do deviate from the path of God, as may eventually happen with all human beings, we have in the story of Adam the possibility for us to repent, knowing that God will forgive us when we repent. So we turn back to God, come back to Him, and God is willing to forgive us. So that's the main lesson that we get from the Quranic presentation of Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about, go back to the creation of Adam, because in the Quran there's this interesting part where God asks the angels to bow down to Adam. And I don't believe that's included in the Bible. So
yes, you're right. It's not included in the Bible. And why? What does it mean in the Quran? Now bowing down today for Muslims means making ruku or sujood, like this specific posture that we adopt in our prayers.
And usually we do that when we're worshiping.
Something. Yes. But the Arabic word usjudu, prostrate, could mean something like humble yourselves. Mm. So the angels being asked to humble themselves before Adam would mean that God has intended for human beings to occupy a very high place in the hierarchy of creation, and that places on human beings a great responsibility as well. And the Quran describes that responsibility by using the term Khalifa. The Quran says that God said to the angels, "Inni ja'ilun fil ardi khalifa." I'm going to place a khalifa upon earth. Now, khalifa in the Muslim context refers to one who is in a ruling authority, and usually that follows from a previous authority. in this case, there is no previous authority, and Adam is given the responsibility to rule on earth whatever God intends for earth. So he's to carry out God's commandments. We, by extension, are given a similar responsibility to carry out God's rule here on earth. And of course, our Christian friends pray for that constantly by saying, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven."
Thank you for that, all those interesting insights, Dr. Shabrali. I wish we had more time to go into all of them, but it was still a very good discussion. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you.